We recorded this episode on May 12th, and we did it while self-isolating at our homes because of the novel coronavirus. Many of you are probably doing the same thing right now.
So this may sound a little different from our earlier episodes, and you might hear some background noise that we usually don't have in the studio, but that's part of the new normal that we're all adjusting to as we stay home to help flatten the curve during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Of course, the new coronavirus and COVID-19 are very much on everyone's minds, and Live Science is covering the latest news. You can find updates on our website from every state in the U.S., from the CDC and the World Health Organization, and from researchers around the world.
But we also hope that by continuing to bring you life's little mysteries, we can all continue to be reminded of the amazing science that's all around us.
Thanks for listening. Keep safe and stay healthy.
Hello, and welcome to Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science. I'm Gina Briner, Editor-in-Chief at Live Science.
And I'm Mindy Weisberger, a senior writer at Live Science. The world can be a pretty mysterious place, and we at Live Science love to ask and answer questions about mysteries big and small, about ancient civilizations, our planet and solar system, the plants and animals that live alongside us, our bodies and how they work, and technologies that we use every day.
Each episode of this podcast introduces mysterious questions, and we think the answers will really surprise you.
We'll also hear about cutting-edge research in labs and in fieldwork around the world to answer these and other intriguing scientific questions.
In today's episode of Life's Little Mysteries, we'll take a closer look at a mysterious and sometimes terrifying phenomenon that wakes us up in the middle of a good night's sleep: nightmares. You're walking down a dark hallway. Flickering lights and spooky shadows climbing up the walls.
There's something following you. You know it's getting closer, but you're afraid to look behind you.
You start to walk a little faster. You hear a faint sound of laughter, and are those claws scraping on metal?
You turn a corner. It's a dead end. There's nowhere left to go. Slowly, you turn around.
The maniacal laughter gets closer.
Your heart starts to pound.
Your palms start to sweat.
Whatever unspeakable horror is chasing you is about to turn the corner.
And then suddenly, you wake up. It was just a nightmare.
You're safe. Until the next time you fall asleep. I'm very glad to be awake right now and not being chased by some monster from my subconscious.
Oh, totally.
That's something that is a common theme in nightmares, both in movies and, you know, and from our own experiences.
So what exactly is an actual nightmare?
Well, according to the Mayo Clinic, a nightmare is a dream that is disturbing, that is usually accompanied by negative feelings. So something that either makes you really scared or, you know, so like you're being chased by something terrifying, like, you know, maybe a killer clown or I don't know. Did you have any nightmares when you were a kid about anything that was particularly scary or horrifying?
Oh my gosh, I had this repeat nightmare. And it was about a hippopotamus. And
a hippo, okay.
So I was really little and I would go and I'd walk over to this area of this big water body. And the hippo would come up, its humongous mouth would open, and it would bite my arm off. And I had that nightmare like night after night. I have no
That's
idea.
That's absolutely terrifying.
It was really terrifying.
Did you have some kind of a traumatic experience with hippos at the zoo or something?
So I don't think I had that. I think what happened is, you know, you read about hippos in all kinds of kids' books from like, you know, Pajama Time, whatever it is, these cute little hippos.
And usually cute. They're these big smiley faces.
And they're wearing like human clothes and doing ballet. But so I think
but not
I
your
went
hippo.
To the... no,
you
totally
went to a,
not.
Your hippo went to a dark place.
Well, I think that I must have gone to a zoo or gone somewhere where I actually learned that hippos were aggressive. And I think that was pretty traumatic for me. So,
Okay. Well, that's understandable.
No, totally. How about you?
I don't remember having like any one particular scary thing that would turn up in my dreams. But I remember just like weird, disturbing things, like just being in a room where there were just all of these bugs all over everything, like really covering every surface. And they were much, much bigger then they were like, they looked like regular bugs, except they were huge. And there were just so many of them. And that was, yeah, and that would be kind of a recurring thing. So, but that's the thing about nightmares is that, you know, the negative feelings don't necessarily have to be something that you're terrified of. It can be something that either makes you feel really disgusted or even something that makes you embarrassed.
Right.
Right. Like people talk about having, you know, like a recurring nightmare of, you know, showing up for a final exam without their pants or forgetting to, you know, like, or being on stage for, you know, like their big scene in a play and they, you know, they've completely forgotten their lines.
And I think one of the hard things about nightmares is that when you wake up, you know you were having a nightmare, but it's pretty upsetting still. You know, it feels pretty vivid, pretty real.
Right. That's another thing about nightmares is that there is this sense of whatever it is that's happening that's generating these negative feelings. It feels real. There's this, you know, so there's this sense of, you know, your emotions being wrapped up in whatever it is that's happening. And sometimes there's, you know, there's some kind of a story that's related to threats to your safety or to survival. And then usually what happens is that the emotions that you're feeling are so strong that you wake up really, really fast. So there's still this sense of, you know, being disoriented and your heart is pounding and, you know, you're sweaty and, you know, you have all these feelings that are just sort of, you know, that are left over from the dream. And even after you've woken up, they're still incredibly vivid.
Yeah. And I think, you know, after nightmares, it's hard to go back to sleep. It's like you were awake going through this traumatic experience.
Right. It actually does feel like you've experienced a genuine trauma.
So when do we start having nightmares? Do some people have nightmares more than others?
Pretty much. I mean, not everyone remembers what they, you know, their dreams or their nightmares. I mean, you know, there are always some people that say like, oh, I don't dream. Well, you know, everyone dreams, but they don't remember them. Yeah. And so not everyone. So everyone dreams. And so which means that to a certain extent, everyone experiences nightmares. But, you know, they affect different people differently. And nightmares begin when usually at around age 3 to 6 years. And they happen during the stage of sleep called REM sleep, which is when the brain is more active. And REM is for rapid eye movement. So this is a sleep stage where, because there's heightened brain activity, that's what sleep researchers think has to do with, you know, that's what generates whatever it is that's happening in your brain, because we don't know exactly what it is that that makes you have these incredibly vivid experiences that can also be kind of negative.
Right. So your brain is more active. It's able to put stories together. It's making up this storyline or whatever, even though you're actually physically sleeping.
Right. And, you know, sometimes it puts things together that are just like weird. And like there's just something happening that doesn't make any sense. But sometimes in nightmares, what happens is that whatever the storyline is, it's something that really is just overtly negative.
And I think that people, we always want to figure out why we had a certain dream, why we had a certain dream one night versus another one the other night,
right.
And we put these things together. But what actually is causing dreams? What's causing us to have these dreams?
Well, when it comes to nightmares, I mean, there's still so much that scientists are figuring out about dreams and how they work and what exactly our brain is using dreams for during sleep. So there's still a lot that's unknown. But when, as far as nightmares are concerned, they do seem more common when people are experiencing stress or anxiety or trauma in their daily life.
Right.
So, you know, when you're asleep, your brain is processing these negative experiences, and that's something that can come out in a nightmare. And how severe and how frequent the nightmares are can have something to do with the severity of the anxiety or the trauma that you're experiencing.
Okay.
When you're awake.
And studies have shown that a lot of people, up to about 80% of people who have post-traumatic stress disorder, actually experience nightmares beginning within about 3 months of that trauma. And so those nightmares can apparently persist throughout their lives, where they are replaying this trauma.
Mm-hmm. Well, PTSD is something that's recognized as an extremely heightened sense of trauma. So it's actually not surprising that level of trauma would be something that would play out in dreams in a very disturbing way and would have a long-lasting effect.
Right.
And in fact, there have been a lot of studies that have been done on the effects of PTSD on people who have served in the military. And in fact, there was a study in 2018 in the Journal of Clinical Sleep Medicine about sleep disturbance and nightmares in people who in U.S. military personnel. So they looked at 500 people who were on active duty, and they found that 31% of them experienced weekly nightmares. And of those, 60% had nightmares that were specifically related to trauma that they had experienced while they were serving. But the other thing about that is that often those who actually in the military who have nightmares don't report them. So that was another one of the big findings from that study, is that this is something that's probably a lot more widespread than people know about right now.
I could see that leading to a lot of suffering if during the day, or, you know, you're thinking about the trauma that you experienced, then you're trying to get a good night's sleep and you're replaying all of that trauma at night. So,
right. Yeah.
And right now, during the coronavirus pandemic, you know, it is a traumatic experience. This is,
right,
you know, a crisis that people are experiencing right now in one way or another, you know, some more directly than others. And people are saying they are having more bizarre dreams, more anxious dreams,
yes,
more nightmares during the coronavirus. So,
well, this is it's a hugely disruptive event. It's something that, you know, we still don't know how it's going to play out. It's something that, you know, that's, you know, is a huge source of anxiety for people about their health and about their economic future and their economic stability. And so yeah, that's actually not surprising. But we're going to talk about that in a little more detail later.
And even watching, you know, as we would expect, even reading scary books or watching scary movies can be a trigger for some, especially if you do this before going to sleep. And I actually remember when I started reading Stephen King's Misery, which maybe I should have expected.
Oh my God.
This.
I had the same experience. No. When I started reading Stephen King for the first time. I was just,
yes,
you know, like I used to read
time.
Before bed. So I'd read my Stephen King books before bed, and then I
not
then
a good
these
idea.
These disturbing dreams.
I mean, who knew, right?
Well, I guess in retrospect, yeah. It's like,
yeah,
why
I'm
would
kidding.
You think that reading a scary book or watching a scary movie before bed is a good idea?
Yeah, but I didn't feel scared reading it so much, but I literally had to stop reading it before bed because I was having nightmares. So
yeah, no, I that's true, because I don't remember being scared while I was reading it. But then, you know, I guess then once I went to sleep, it would just come roaring out of my subconscious.
Yeah,
whatever it was,
right?
It was, yeah, like reanimated like pets that were back from the dead, or cars that wanted to kill
or
you,
or some torture scene.
Yeah, something like that, which he was so good at writing.
Yeah, so good. I agree. So, scary books, but also there are actual medications that can cause nightmares while you're taking those medications.
Right. Like what kind of medications?
Beta blockers, which are used to control blood pressure, amphetamines, and even some antidepressants can apparently cause nightmares.
Okay. So there are, you know, aside from, you know, serious trauma, there are just, you know, just normal things that may, you know, that may happen in daily life that can lead to nightmares. And having some nightmares is normal. But then there are some cases where having nightmares is not normal.
Right. So how do you know? Like, how could a person distinguish between, you know, this is just what other people experience, or I probably should seek help?
I think that, you know, like a person would probably, you know, you should be able to tell if your nightmares are so bad that you're either not sleeping at all, or they're, you know, they're happening all the time, or they're very severe, or even when you're awake, they still cause like lingering and lasting distress, or, you know, or even behavioral problems, because especially in young kids, that when they're, you know, they really don't know how to cope with nightmares. So that can lead to things like, you know, fear of the dark or fear of going to sleep. And so in those kind of extreme cases, then they're not just regular nightmares. Then it's known as, it's referred to as nightmare disorder or parasomnia.
Oh, okay. And so, and like the, you know, in the military where these guys were not sort of reporting this, you don't have to tough out nightmares. There are therapies and treatments. So if
yes.
you consult your doctor, they can walk you through those and hopefully help you get a good night's sleep.
Yes. Yes.
But there are some things you can do on your own as well to help prevent normal nightmares.
Right. Like even just normal, you know, like normal run-of-the-mill nightmares. They're obviously, you know, just going right to the source, you know, dealing with whatever. Because, you know, sometimes it's not really so clear from, you know, from a dream or a nightmare, like what the heck is going on. But sometimes, you know, you may have a sense that, you know, whatever the manifestation is of what your anxiety, you know, like what anxiety it represents while you're awake. And obviously dealing with that source of anxiety will, you know, like will help with the nightmare. Like if you're having nightmares about not being prepared for a test and you're, you know, you're under a lot of stress at school, then obviously, you know, knowing that you're preparing and getting all your work done, that can help alleviate some of your anxiety. But there are other tricks that you can use. So even though we can't directly dial into how we dream, there are things that you can do to promote restful sleep that can help maybe take the edge off a nightmare. And so a behavioral sleep researcher named Christina Pierpaoli Parker, she's also a clinical psychology resident at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And so she had some recommendations for just for, you know, like general good sleep habits that could help with nightmares. And so they start with having a consistent wake-up time. So if you wake up at the same time every day, then your body gets acclimated to your sleep patterns. And so having less disruption in your sleep cycle could help with nightmares. She recommends staying active during the day, using your bed only for sleeping or, you know, normal bed activities and that also helps your body just kind of associate bed with restful sleep. And then, of course, you know, avoiding devices before bed and then taking a warm bath.
And so how does my kids take warm baths generally before bed?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because it calms them? How does that help a person sleep?
Well, it's interesting. And actually, this was something I read about. I didn't know about this, but there was a study in 2019 in the Sleep Medicine Reviews that explained exactly how this works, because I actually thought it was because when you take a warm bath or a warm shower, you know, you feel all nice and warm and cozy afterwards, and that helps you fall asleep. But it's actually the opposite. So what happens is, like, when you're in a warm bath, what that does is that draws heat from your core to your surface. So it's actually cooling your body core, and that's what helps you fall asleep.
That's really interesting. I would never have guessed that.
It's a little counterintuitive, but yeah. Actually, like, being cooler is, and I have to say, I'm one of those people that likes having, you know, like, the window open just a crack in the winter, because I like kind of burrowing under the blankets. Like,
that's
I like
true.
Being a little bit yep. cold and then having the blankets on. Yeah. So that actually, I know that helps me sleep.
But if you find yourself in the middle of a nightmare, what can you do then?
Aha. Well, we're about to find out.
So more restful sleep couldn't hurt, of course, you know, with nightmares and
right.
and having a nice sound sleep. But when you're having nightmares and they're haunting your bedtime, it would be nice if you could literally switch off that scary sleep story.
Oh, my God. I wish I could do that.
Yeah, me too. Which brings us to today's mystery. Can you turn off nightmares?
Okay. So what does research tell us about that?
So there's not tons of research on turning off nightmares while you're having the nightmare. But some research does suggest that lucid dreaming can help. So it can help you literally turn off the nightmare, turn off the dream, tell yourself to stop having the nightmare. But there's still not enough research to confirm this, but it looks promising.
What exactly are lucid dreams?
When someone is lucid dreaming, they're actually aware that they're having a dream. And they can sometimes even control that dream and determine its destiny.
Okay, so it's like you're dreaming, but you're also directing it from the sidelines.
Right. So it's sort of like you're awake, like a waking dream, I guess.
Okay. All right. But how would that work in a nightmare?
The research that I've seen that's looked into this was published in 2019, and it basically did a review of past research, and I think they found 10 relevant studies, and they looked at how lucid dreaming could decrease the frequency, the intensity, the psychological stress of nightmares. And the conclusion they came to is that we need more research, but there's some promising case reports and other studies that suggest it could be helpful.
So is the idea that if you practice lucid dreaming, even when you're not having a nightmare, it's almost like you're exercising a muscle in your brain. I know that's a terrible analogy because there are no muscles in the brain, but it's almost like you're learning a technique that can then, like, maybe even stop a nightmare before it starts.
Yeah, exactly. So they think that basically this idea of being in control and knowing that the dream isn't real can sort of basically help you feel like you're defeating the demons. You're, you know, not going to avoid them. So it gives you sort of a psychological control. But then there's also an actual brain component, because during lucid dreaming, scientists have found that you activate the frontal part of your brain. And this part of your brain is linked to, you know, being rational, having executive control, things like that. And at the same time, you're inhibiting the limbic system. And that's like the center of your emotions. So if you're more reasonable, less emotional, that there's a sense that, you know, you might not have as many nightmares, which seem to be pure emotion in some ways. And bizarre, not reasonable.
This is almost, I mean, this almost feels like this is something that was lifted right out of the Nightmare on Elm Street movie series.
Oh, yeah.
Because didn't they do that? Didn't they kind of they trained to be dream warriors? So they were basically, so they were learning how to move within the dream world in a way that let them control what was happening so they could kill the monster.
It's pretty scary. And I don't remember ever having a lucid dream, even though apparently a lot of people have had them at least once, you mm-hmm. know, but it does. It sounds really scary.
Well, how can you actually do lucid dreaming?
There are various ways that you can sort of prompt yourself to or give yourself the best circumstances under which to have a lucid dream, basically. And one method is called wake back to bed. And so scientists have said that if you set an alarm 30 minutes before your normal wake up time, and you wake up, but you stay in bed and you sort of think about a lucid dream, think about some dream you would like to have while you're going back to sleep. They said that is one way to practice perhaps having a lucid dream. And then another way is just, you know, dreams are suggestive. So if you're thinking about it a lot, you're thinking the day before about it, there's a chance that that would help you have a lucid dream. You know, there's no certainty to this, but these are things that could help.
Okay. All right. So there's not a lot of certainty, and this is something that's still being investigated. But what are there some things that scientists do know for sure that they're more certain about when it comes to lucid dreaming?
For some reason, kids up to about age 16 are more likely to have lucid dreams. I mean, and I guess that's not so surprising. It seems like kids have, you know, because they wouldn't be so...
Because their grip on reality is kind of tenuous
exactly.
at best.
Their rational mind wouldn't be so surprised, you know?
Right.
But, you know, and other studies have found that in terms of topics, things that people like to have lucid dreams about or the most common things, activities, flying comes up on top as one of the most popular. Yeah.
Okay. I wonder if that's because flying is something that you know that flying is something that you cannot do in life. So if you're flying, you must be in a dream. And so if you can kind of hold on to that idea, then that's an aspect of what makes lucid dreaming work.
Very true. And so this applies to the other activities they found that were popular for lucid dreamers. Mm-hmm. So doing magic was one. Breathing underwater.
Okay.
Talking with animals. Time travel, and even talking to the dream characters, which sounded kind of fun. Yeah.
Okay. Because, of course, you know, the dream characters are also you. So you really are just the puppet master pulling all the strings.
Oh, it's so meta.
Right. Okay. So is lucid dreaming something that everyone can start practicing and that everyone can learn to do?
The research that has been done suggests that the average person has fewer than 10 of these in their lifetime. I mean, have you ever had a lucid dream?
I feel like I've had some dreams where I've been able to kind of say, oh, I want this thing to happen, and then it happens. But then I'm just like, oh my God, what, you know, like what just happened? And then I lose control, and then, you know, there goes the lucid dream. So
Right. It'd be cool if our listeners could, you know, comment with some of their lucid dreams. It'd be neat to hear about those.
Oh, yeah.
So the average person has fewer than 10. So it's not common. And it's not common to be a frequent lucid dreamer. But there are certain medicines that can increase the likelihood you'll have a lucid dream. And then also studies have looked at certain types of electrical stimulation, zapping the brain, basically.
Actually, you know what? It's interesting. I'm remembering now that when my husband quit smoking years ago, he tried doing those nicotine patches.
Yeah.
And I remember him saying that when he was using the nicotine patches, he would get these really vivid dreams. And he mentioned that one time that he had what sounded like a lucid dream, that he was actually able to just kind of like just decide what was going to happen and happen. And he said that he visited a bunch of forums about this because that's what he does. And he said that people were saying that this is something that is actually not uncommon for people that use these nicotine patches, especially if you use more than you're supposed to.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And then there are certain people, regardless of medicine, apparently, who are more likely to have these lucid dreams.
Okay, like who?
Like various studies have, you know, they've looked at different groups and one study found that more insightful people were basically more likely to have lucid dreams. And they looked at sort of the puzzles that these people could solve. And the ones that could solve more of these puzzles were also more likely to be lucid dreamers. So that was interesting. Yeah. And another study has found that people with narcolepsy apparently have more lucid dreams. And that one wasn't so surprising for scientists because I guess the narcoleptic brain is sort of awake. So even when they're sleeping, I think because they have these fits and whatever, these certain stints of sleeping and awake, sleeping awake, their brain looks more awake when they're sleeping.
Oh, okay. So you'd be able to do things more like making conscious choices.
Right. That would affect it. Exactly. Yeah. And also 2019 study found that long-term meditators were also more likely to be lucid dreamers, though they weren't sure exactly the reason for it. But even the group of people in the study that they trained in mindfulness they weren't able to get them to have lucid dreams. So it was something about this long time or long-term meditation that seems to affect lucid dreams.
Hmm. That's interesting. So, yeah. Okay. So let's say you're in a situation where you are, you know, trying to combine lucid dreaming with an approach to either end nightmares or to, you know, get yourself out of a nightmare. So once you have a lucid dream, you know, then what do you do then?
Okay. Well, one simple thing you can do is basically you're aware. So you know you're in the nightmare and just tell yourself to wake up.
Okay. Easy.
You know, you're in there.
Easy way out.
Let's get out of this nightmare. But some scientists say that it's better to actually confront those demons, to confront the nightmare. And so you can actually talk to or confront the scary, the monsters, whatever nightmare you're having, you can actually confront it within the nightmare and knowing, being aware that you are in a dream. So you know, and knowing you can't get hurt. And that's another thing you can do is telling yourself in that nightmare, I can't physically get hurt. I'm in a dream. And apparently that can help to dissolve the nightmare or make it less scary. So it's not actually a nightmare. And another trick is that a lucid dreamer could actually change their nightmare. You know, they can change the ending and turn it into a really cool dream. So that's kind of cool to think about.
So rewrite the nightmare and give yourself a happy ending.
Exactly. The fairy tale ending for your nightmare. So nightmares and bizarre dreams seem to be more common right now, with online anecdotes suggesting that the coronavirus pandemic may be pervading our sleeping brains. And we thought it would be interesting to speak with a scientist who actually studies these types of vivid, anxiety-riddled dreams. So joining me today to talk about her research is Dr. Deirdre Barrett, a Harvard dream researcher and author of The Committee of Sleep. Dr. Barrett, thanks so much for being here today. How did you get into such exciting research studying dreams and nightmares?
Well, I've specialized in dreams. I did my dissertation on it, so pretty much my whole career. In fact, I was interested in dreams as a kid. I think most people go to graduate school in psychology and then pick a specialty, but it's more like I picked the specialty, you know, more than a decade before I was in grad school. And I've done research on a lot of aspects of dreams, dreams and creativity and lucid dreams. But trauma in dreams is one of my interest areas. In fact, one of my books is titled that. And so I had collected dreams after 9/11 and from Kuwaitis after the Iraqi occupation and done an analysis on 500 dreams that I didn't collect but found in a library from POWs in a World War II Nazi prisoner of war camp.
Oh, wow.
So when this started happening, it just seemed immediately obvious to me that I would be interested in seeing what the dreams about this are like and how they resemble past crises and how they differ from.
So you focus a lot of your research on dreams during or after trauma, such as dreams people had after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And the current coronavirus pandemic is for sure a crisis, a trauma situation. So perhaps it's not surprising that people seem to be having more vivid dreams and nightmares right now. From what you know, is this really happening? Are people having worse dreams, more nightmares right now?
Yes, I'm certainly hearing about people recalling more dreams, longer dreams, more vivid dreams, more bizarre dreams. And I think that's sort of unique to this crisis because after 9/11 and when big storms hit, if anything, people aren't sleeping quite as much, either because they're worried or because they have extra things they have to do about the crisis. And so this one is really unique in that what most of us are supposed to do about the crisis is to stay home and not go to our usual jobs or school. And so I think that a lot of chronically slightly sleep-deprived people are catching up on sleep through this.
Oh, how interesting.
And the strongest correlation with recall of dreams and vividness of dreams is how many hours you sleep. So I think that every crisis stirs up our dream life a little bit for psychological reasons, but superimposed on that, I think for this one, we're seeing a big physiologic rebound in just dream time that we're having.
Are you tracking dreams during this pandemic?
What I'm tracking is not exactly the phenomena I was just talking about. I'm okay. Looking more specifically at dreams that people feel like are about the COVID-19 pandemic. So as defined by the dreamers. So I have an online survey that went up the morning of March 24th. And I now have 7,000 dreams collected from that. So I informally, I'm very aware of how many more people are having vivid dreams aside from whether they're about the pandemic, but I'm looking at the pandemic-related ones.
And are you seeing any trends or anything interesting in these pandemic-related dreams?
Yes. I mean, the patterns are more like past crises than they are different, but there are some differences. I'm seeing big clusters of dreams about coming down with the virus. That's a very obvious one. People are having trouble breathing in their dream. They're spiking a fever. Or sometimes it's more dreamlike, like one woman looked down at her stomach and saw blue stripes on her stomach. And in her dream thought, she remembered that experts say that blue stripes on your stomach is the first sign of COVID-19. So she realized that she had it. Then there are lots of metaphors for the virus, and I'm seeing more dream metaphors. That always happens a bit after any crisis, that sometimes our dreams substitute other things for the real threat, but I'm seeing it more with this, lots of metaphor dreams. And there's a big cluster of bug attack dreams.
Oh,
I did not see those after 9/11 or other disasters.
Bug attacks. Can you elaborate?
It's really common for this, that swarms of hornets or bees or every flying bug in the world are attacking the dreamer. Armies of cockroaches are running at them. Masses of wriggling worms are threatening them. All kinds of bug attacks. And I think this is partly because of the slang term. You know, when you say I've got a bug, you mean you have an illness, usually a virus. But also, I think at a deeper level, that lots of little things that cumulatively could kill one is a good metaphor for the invisible menace of the virus.
Okay. Are there any other types of dreams or nightmares that stand out right now?
I see a lot of other metaphors. The only other one that's kind of unique to this is I'm seeing invisible monsters multiple times.
Oh,
sometimes
wow.
The person is outside and they just know that there are these monsters that can attack and kill you, but you can't see them. And other times they're sort of in some building and there are these shadows. You don't see the monster itself, but you can either hear it or you see its shadow moving around. Or one woman was seeing all the people around her were one by one being knocked down and beginning to suffer these terrible injuries. And she couldn't see the attacker, but she could see them being killed by the attacker that was invisible.
Why would people have these dreams specifically during the pandemic?
I think that's very unique to the virus. Is not something we can see like hijackers or a tidal wave or most kinds of threats. But then I see every other metaphor that I did see after 9/11. I've seen tsunamis, I've seen tornadoes, hurricanes, fires breaking out, mass shooters in the street, and sometimes the whatever the metaphoric threat is will be combined with something from the details about the pandemic, like de Blasio will be telling people that they have to shelter in their apartments because there are swarms of poisonous bugs or because there are shooters in the street, or Trump will be saying that the tsunami doesn't exist, it's fake news. There'll be some detail
from reality
about the pandemic mixed in.
Why do our brains during dreams come up with these strange stories of bug attacks and other bizarre metaphors? And making these dreams so vivid visually? Like, what's going on in the brain?
Well, what we know is that during rapid eye movement sleep, when most dreams are occurring, our secondary visual cortex, the area that doesn't process from the eye, but it forms images, it is even more active than when we're awake. It's really ramped up. So we know that we're thinking in a very visual state. During dreams, our emotion areas are more active too. So when we're feeling fear in REM sleep, I think that it's very automatic to start trying to pair that with images that would be appropriate to that. And when there's not an obvious image, after 9/11, we saw buildings collapsing and planes smashing into things and hijackers with knives. There were, you know, several very obvious associated images. But for the average person, they don't have one clear, you know, what the COVID-19 pandemic looks like. So their worried mind pairs all sorts of other things. Swarms of bugs are especially appropriate, but everything else gets called into play occasionally.
Are some people more prone to having vivid dreams or nightmares than others?
Well, yes, it's interesting that you said vivid dreams and nightmares. They're two main correlates with having anxiety dreams or nightmares. And one is daytime anxiety, both being a more anxious person over the long term as a character trait makes you tend to have more anxious dreams, but also a time you are particularly especially anxious is a time when those nights will have more anxious dreams. So that's one strong predictor, anxiety by day, anxiety at night. But the other is vividness of dreams and simply amount of dream recall. There's sort of a cluster of traits of recalling more dreams, longer dreams, more vivid dreams, more bizarre dreams, and more emotional dreams that all seem to go somewhat together. So some of the same people that have the most vivid, wonderful dreams, that have peak experience dreams sometimes, they will also have more nightmares. They just have a more active, more emotional dream life.
What is the difference between just a bad dream and a nightmare?
I mean, in a common sense way, they may just be on a continuum, but usually in psychology, the term nightmare is reserved for a dream where there's just a sense of overwhelming terror. And people very often say they subjectively, they feel like the nightmare wakes them up. Mm-hmm. Whereas anxiety dream is used more for ones where clearly worry and fear is the main emotion, but there's not that just huge swept away by terror feeling. And I would say both after 9/11 and now, that the average person's most typical dream is an anxiety dream. They're worried about this, you know, bad things are happening in their dream. There's a lot more anxiety than you would see in a set of dreams from normal times. But on the other hand, most of them are not nightmares for the typical person who is mostly experiencing this on the news and is worried for their own safety. But for the healthcare providers in this case and the first responders and the people who barely escaped the lower floors of the World Trade Center for 9/11, the typical dream is just a full-on nightmare, and it's rather distinctively a post-traumatic nightmare that's reenacting the worst thing the person experienced by day. And so our healthcare providers are having very repetitive nightmares about trying to get a tube down someone whose throat is too constricted to do that, about having the ventilator fail on them as they're trying to save the person's life. They feel horribly responsible for one or more patients, and yet they have almost no control over the situation, and a patient is dying on them. That's the most typical nightmare right now for the healthcare people.
Are nightmares bad for us? Do they make our waking lives better, worse?
Well, garden variety nightmares, which are just really terrifying dreams, I think that just like other dreams, they are working and sorting things, and they're usually using metaphors that tell us a little bit more about what we're worry about. You can do the sort of interpretation on regular nightmares that you would do on other dreams. And they're coming from the same state of sleep as regular dreams, which is most of them from rapid eye movement sleep. But post-traumatic nightmares are really a thing unto themselves. They occur equally across the sleep cycle, not just in REM sleep. Also, a lot of us think that they are essentially the same thing that people are experiencing with daytime flashbacks, where even when one's awake, one's having intrusive imagery about some awful thing that's happened, that this is just happening awake in REM sleep, in non-REM sleep, all the time. So I think that post-traumatic nightmares seem to be damaging to a person. Most people who have them describe it like being re-traumatized all over again, that it's just as if the patient's death or the rape or the fire, you know, just happened minutes ago before you wake up. And I think that in an evolutionary sense, that may have been adaptive, that in all our tens of thousands of years on the African savanna, that if something bad happened, it was likely to happen again. If the tribe over the hill came and attacked your village, they might do that tomorrow. If a wild animal came and almost got into your hut, it might come back and get in tomorrow. So I think that their whole purpose is to keep us terrified and feeling like the bad thing has just happened and completely focused on being on our guard about it. Mm-hmm. And that we have that instinct in these dreams happen because once upon a time that was very adaptive. But just like with many of our instincts, like wanting to eat as much sugar and fat as you can find because they were rare on the savannah, lots of things that we're biologically programmed for are not adaptive anymore. And I think post-traumatic nightmares are one of those.
Are there certain questions right now that you would like to answer?
Well, I'm very curious to see where these evolve. I'm already beginning to see slightly fewer dreams that are just about the virus itself, and proportionally somewhat more that are about secondary effects like the lockdown or being furloughed from work or homeschooling your kid or any of these outgrowths. As people get used to the virus, there are more dreams from the people who are sheltering alone, that they've been put in prison, or they've been appointed to be a one-person colony on Mars, or things that exaggerate the loneliness, or likewise, the people who are sheltering with their families and maybe even extended family that doesn't usually live with them, they're dreaming that the whole neighborhood has moved in with them and they can't find a place to sit down in their house. Or one poor woman who's actually homeschooling her child dreamed that the school called her and told her that they were sending the child's entire class to shelter with her during the pandemic and that she needed to teach the whole class.
I've been talking to Dr. Deirdre Barrett, a Harvard dream researcher. You can check out her book, The Committee of Sleep, on Amazon. The link is in the show notes. Dr. Barrett, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for joining us today for Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science. Today's nightmare mystery, Can You Turn Off Nightmares?, is available as a Life's Little Mysteries article on our website, livescience.com.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for even more Life's Little Mysteries and for the latest science news. You can also join the conversation in our Live Science forums, where you can pose Life's Little Mysteries questions of your own or even suggest topics for upcoming podcast episodes. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss out on new episodes.
What will we talk about next? It's a mystery.
Literally, it'll be another Life's Little Mystery.
Life's Little Mysteries is produced in conjunction with Audio Boom as part of their Audio Boom Originals Network.